This is the DiPietro and Rothenberg podcast.
Yep.
Listen live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York.
Yep.
The ESPN New York app.
Yep.
Or on your smart speaker by asking it to play 98.7 ESPN.
This might be a true statement. I'm more excited right now for the Knicks than I have been in a decade.
Well, what would be the one thing that would be an exception? 2 years ago?
2 years ago. Yeah, that's it.
But we said last week, like, this team, we've really said it all year. This team is better than the one from 2 years ago.
This team would beat that team and either sweep them or five.
I agree. So, like, the upside is certainly greater, which means there's more potential for a deeper run in these playoffs. And, you know, when you just look at the fickle nature of this NBA so far, like, maybe some people are getting a little bit carried away, but some teams' mortality or their playoff mortality, like, has flashed before their eyes already. Like, when Giannis went down, Buck fans are sitting there, like, holding their breath, saying, oh, my God, like, what if he's done for the rest of the postseason, God forbid? Like, then that opens up a world of possibility.
It does, right? but it's funny, and this is frustrating to me as well. The other day we got a call, you know, people are so fickle, Dan, that if you have a great game in the playoffs, you're winning the whole thing. And if you have an awful game in the playoffs, you're in huge heaps of trouble.
Yeah.
So game one, it's like, why can't the Knicks go to the Eastern Conference Finals? Game two, I'm really worried about this series. Well, these series are long and arduous, and there's ebbs and there's flows and there's ups and there's downs, and you're coming off a game where you didn't play well. But here's the thing, and this is, I think, the magic elixir in this entire equation. You're coming home. And you're coming to the Garden. And I know the Knicks have not been great at the Garden this season, but I for some reason, and maybe I'm wrong, I expect this to be like fever pitch really in the heads of the Cleveland Cavaliers tonight.
That's why this one is so big tonight, right? Like, we were talking about it earlier. Like, that place is going to be jumping. Forget about what the ticket prices cost to get in on the secondary market, but the buzz is going to be unlike anything. It's going to be bigger than anything. And look, those Atlanta games were pretty special, the first couple of games, and it felt like the roof was going to come off of Madison Square Garden. Tonight should even be bigger than that. Don't you agree?
I mean, plus it's an 8:30 game, so you're going to have that little extra juice, and people are going to have a little more time to pregame imbibe, right? I just feel like tonight at the Garden is going to be a very special, like, I'll remember this April 21st Knicks-Cavs game for a long time.
And hopefully, though, it gives you the result that you want.
It better.
That's why they have an opportunity. See, look, Cleveland's MO tonight, they're going to be telling themselves, hey, we got to get the crowd out of this game early, because you know the place will be jumping. And if you get them out of the game early, and if a guy like Mitchell, let's say, goes, you know, Mitchell, even though he's their best player, the guy who I think is the X factor for Cleveland in this game tonight is the guy who showed up in game two, and that's Darius Garland, right? He's the guy that they have to kind of keep under wraps tonight if they want to find a way to win game three.
Yeah, I agree with that, because here's how I see it. You saw it in game one. Let Donovan Mitchell get his.
Yep.
If Mitchell goes for 30 or 40 or 40, I don't care. What I care about is, you know, what does Mobley do? What does Garland do? If those guys are kept in check, it doesn't matter what Donovan Mitchell does if you keep the second and third options for Cleveland quiet. If Mitchell plays well and those guys also play well, now I think you have a big problem on your hands.
I agree wholeheartedly. And look, there's this game is going to have its ebbs and flows like it always does. And who's going to be able to withstand those better? But I just, one way or the other, like you said, both of these games are important. And yes, I mean, in a perfect world, you'd love to be able to steal 3 and 4 and take a cushy 3-1 lead. But if I was a betting man, am I going to sit here and think that that's likely the outcome for the next two games for the Knicks? Probably not. If you're asking me, Dave, what I think is going to happen over the next two, I think that we're going to split them. And then we're going to play essentially a best 2 out of 3 going back to Cleveland for game 5.
That gets me nervous. I don't love the look of
but
that.
But did you expect anything different with this series? These are two evenly matched teams. It's a 4-5. It's supposed to be neck and neck.
Yeah, you're not wrong. But I just, in a perfect world, I'd love to just hold serve at home. If I can win tonight and put all the pressure, because see, to me tonight, there's a lot of pressure on the Knicks. And then if you win this game tonight, all the pressure shifts to Cleveland on Sunday. Because Cleveland, at least I would think, is not going to win three games in a row in this series. So if you're the Knicks and you can somehow win tonight and win Sunday, game five now, house money. Game six is when you come home and you close out the business.
I'll tell you one guy you're also going to keep an eye on to see how he bounces back is Josh Hart, right? Because he was off a little bit in game. We didn't think he was even going to play game two. And then magically, like, the ankle got better overnight, and he still was maybe hampered a little bit, and he wasn't at his best. That you know, we've talked about it so much. That's a guy that they need, right? He's almost become like the heart and soul of this team.
Yes.
Like, he's got to be vintage Josh Hart and the guy we've come to expect tonight here. And being home, I do think that that's going to have a plus and an advantage in one particular area because we hit on it earlier. As far as the bench goes, like, those guys and their contributions, which are so important and have been important for this team all year, starting with Quickly, I think it's easier for them in familiar surroundings playing
at
the Garden.
And that's not Knicks specific. That's every team. Let's bring him in. One of our favorites. He analyzes the NBA like nobody else on ESPN, and that is the great Tim Legler. Good morning, Tim. It's Dave and Dan here on 98.7 ESPN. How you doing?
Morning, gentlemen. I'm doing well. How about you guys?
Good. Hey, I got to tell you, Tim, we are very excited. Like, this doesn't happen all the time. When you're 1-1 coming home, game three at the Garden for the Knicks in a series that we look at and we say, realistically, they can win. What do you expect to see from the crowd, from the Garden, from the Knicks tonight in this all-important game three?
Yeah, it's amazing how different everything feels when it's 1-1, right, coming home, and now you change venues. The Knicks did what they had to do. We hear that kind of thing all the time in a best-of-seven series. You just got to get one on the road. Because in any series, if you're the underdog or you're a lower seed, you're going to have to win a game on the road at some point, just one. And they've done that. I think, obviously, the environment's going to be incredible. You know, to me, covering the league and just even watching, not necessarily being in the venue, because there's a lot of great venues around the league, but watching on television. A game in Madison Square Garden that's got significance, there's nothing like it in the entire NBA. So it's going to be off the charts. Now, they've got to play better than they did the other night, and they don't have a lot of margin for error offensively. So if their top guys collectively play like that offensively, they're going to be in trouble. And Donovan Mitchell's the guy you got to watch because he has embraced moments like this in the past, and he has shown an ability to really take this big stage and make it his own. So that you have to watch for that. Mitchell's going to try to, I think, come out and have it a monster night. And I think the Knicks, they need to play much better offensively than they did the other night.
All right. To that point, Tim, we know that Cleveland's the number one defense in the NBA. But do you think the Knicks are capable of maybe having a performance or two that was maybe a little bit more reminiscent to the way we saw them score the ball during the regular season? Or do you think it's going to have to be one of these ugly, knock 'em, drag 'em, sock 'em type of performances the rest of this series, because that's playoff basketball?
Yeah, it's playoff basketball, and I think Cleveland does that to you because of, you know, their size and the way that they defend. They're just a very good defensive team. They don't make a lot of mistakes. They make you play to your weaknesses. They do a very good job of that. I think they're very well prepared. So, yeah, I don't think this is going to be a shootout like some couple of series we're going to see probably in the Western Conference where, you know, you might have to get to 115, 120 to win the game. I don't necessarily think that's the case. But I do think there's a lot of margin there for growth with the Knicks the way they played the other night. I just thought that they missed a number of open looks that they've got to knock down. I think the adrenaline in the building – I think could be something that early on could work against them a little bit. You know, you squeeze that ball a little bit tight, you want it so bad, there's going to be so much juice in that building and what they feel. Because, you know, you win that first one, you now have put yourself in that first home game. I mean, when you change venues, you now put yourself in a position to win that second home game. You go 3-1, you really put a stranglehold on the series. So there's a lot of pressure at the start of the game. Home teams feel it significantly. Don't be surprised if the Knicks come out and they struggle to make shots early. At some point, though, you're going to find the rhythm. The key is Brunson. Brunson has to be that guy that's the stabilizing force, right? He's got to be getting to his spots, playing efficiently, their entire team confidence when he looks like that.
All right, Tim Legler with us here, 98.7 ESPN. Tim, of the three guys, all have been subpar in the first two games of the series. Which one in your mind needs to step up the most, and which one in your mind, maybe it's the same person, player, will step up the most? Grimes, Quickly, or RJ Barrett?
Yeah, I think Quickly's the guy that I think is not going to be phased by the moment, right? He just doesn't come off as somebody that's going to be affected by what's at stake. So I think he would be a guy that I'd look at that could potentially provide that X factor spark that they're going to need. I think it could be a little bit more difficult for Grimes because of the way he plays. The shot making might not be there. Quickly is a guy that can do a little bit more off the bounce. He's creative with his dribble. Like, he's going to have some escapability to get himself some opportunities with floaters or stuff at the rim. That's a little bit harder for Grimes to come by. So, and then R.J. Barrett, look, he's an inconsistent offensive player. I mean, that's kind of who he is. Your guess would be as good as mine if he's going to come out and have one of those nights. I would not expect necessarily, if you're banking on R.J. Barrett, you have to have a 25-point game and do it shooting the ball efficiently. I think that would be a mistake on your part. That would be very difficult against this team, and it's not really his nature to play that way offensively. The key is going to be Brunson, right? That to me is the guy, and I'm very confident he is going to have a big bounce-back game, and I think Jalen Brunson could be the best player on the floor tonight.
Talking with ESPN's Tim Legler here on DNR 98.7 ESPN. You know, apart from the Knicks series, Tim, you look league-wide here in these playoffs. The officiating has been a big topic of conversation. Dave and I were discussing it, of course, earlier this morning. You saw it play itself out in Brooklyn last night with the Joel Embiid situation and, you know, Draymond earlier in the week, even James Harden last night. How do you think the refs have done league-wide in terms of being consistent with, especially when some of these, you know, fouls are happening that might cross the line? Do you think that it is the same rules for everybody in the way that they're legislating this stuff?
Well, I think my first part of this answer is going to be how difficult their job has become, because it seems like all players do now is try to trick officials. Like, nobody stays on their feet anymore and just guard a guy. Slide your feet, wait till he shoots it, jump, contest it, and play a guy honestly. I feel like these guys are they all have their Screen Actors Guild cards. Every possession, there are guys flopping and flailing and falling all over the court, acting like, you know, they need to go to the emergency room. And it makes the job difficult for the officials because they're not going to catch everything. Some of this stuff is peripheral vision, okay? Now, having said that, this stuff that's going on with some of these incidents with Draymond Green, Joel Embiid, James Harden, this stuff should be able to be fixed in the moment because you have the benefit to go over and look at a replay and take a look at exactly what happened and as many times as you want to. Now, here's my point with that. Let's take a look at compare the Joel Embiid incident with the Draymond Green. Tell me what the difference is. Both guys were provoked, which they were. Sabonis grabbed Green's ankle. Claxton stepped over Embiid. Both guys retaliated. Draymond Green stomped down onto Sabonis' chest. Joel Embiid on his back kicked up into the groin area of Nick Claxton. That just so happens he missed his target. But where are we worried about intent, or are we worried about actually making contact? Because there's no question he was trying to put some work in on the speed bag, if you know what I mean. He just didn't quite connect, right? So to me, it's exactly the same thing as what happened with Draymond Green. Now, as far as the suspension would come with that, so I'm saying Embiid should have been ejected. As far as the suspension, they're saying that the past history played a big part into Draymond Green. Well, Joel Embiid doesn't have any sort of history like that. So if I wanted to use as an excuse to not suspend Joel Embiid, all right, that's part of your criteria. I guess I'll take your word for that. But the fact that that's not a flagrant 2 ejection in the moment when you can go over and look at the replay and see his intent, that shocked me. And then the Harden play, exact opposite. It's so obvious that that's unintentional. He's got his left hand, basically all the airspace was taken away by O'Neal. He's up against Harden's body. He's got the ball in his right hand. So your left hand, when you start to move, your left hand, your off hand, is going to move with momentum in a direction that you're about to go, and you're going to make contact with somebody that's pressed up against your body. I don't think he intended to hit him in the groin. If you go over and you deem that he did intend to do that, there's no way that's a flagrant 2. That is obviously different than what Joel Embiid did, what Draymond Green did. So I think, yes, there is some inconsistency there that the league need to take a hard look at. What exactly are you using for criteria? Because I think, to me, it's totally subjective on the part of the officiating crew that's on the court. Now, the league's going to look at this stuff. They're going to look at Embiid in particular. Be interesting to see what they have to say about it.
All right, Tim, listen, we appreciate you. Thanks for hopping on a couple minutes. Playoffs have been enjoyable so far. Hopefully the Knicks continue some of their winning ways, and we will talk to you down the road.
Sounds good. Look forward to it.
All right, good stuff. Tim. That, of course, is Tim Legler.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro and Rothenberg podcast.
I think they're listening to me.
They're everywhere, Dave.
I know you're here.
Catch the show on demand wherever and whenever you want.
Woohoo! Over here!
Just subscribe to us, rate us, and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
Everybody up in arms over the Max Scherzer thing. Dan, I think it's awful. I think the way Major League Baseball's handled this is terrible, to be honest with you, because what they've now done is created the unknown of... Well, it was his hand was too sticky. It was stickier than we've ever seen any hand in the past. Well, what does that mean? So you're only allowed to use it up to this point? Like, what? There's a gray area, and they define nothing in the rules in Major League Baseball.
None. Absolutely. And it is strange. And look, unfortunately, if you're Max Scherzer, you now become the poster child for the sticky substances in Major League Baseball's crackdown. Now, if you ask me, look, a couple of years ago, they put this thing into motion. And you remember last year, baseball made it a point to let the word out that they are reinforcing and they want the umpires to be even more strict about checking for sticky substances and that type of thing because they felt that maybe last year it got a little too lax, right? Like, oh, we aren't nabbing anybody. We're not catching anybody. I mean, you guys are asleep at the wheel. So they let the umpires and put them on high alert and say, hey, guys, start doing your job and nab somebody.
Right.
Now, the only two guys that they've gotten in the past, Hector Santiago, Caleb Smith, those guys aren't exactly household names. Most people don't even know who they are, you know, the average baseball fan. But now... now you get a Max Scherzer, and you have him dead to rights, and he's got the 10-game suspension. Now you got your pound of flesh if you're MLB, right? Now you say, aha, it's working. Even one of the best pitchers that we've seen in this generation, a guy who's a first ballot Hall of Famer, we got him. Even though it is completely ambiguous right now as to what the ground rules are and to what the threshold of the quote-unquote sticky substance was, because there isn't any uniformity across Major League Baseball.
But is that what we want?
Like, no, you don't want that at all.
It's an aha, we got Max Scherzer. Is that good for the game of baseball?
It's not good for the game of baseball. But I think that it's good to the people maybe that run the sport because it shows that this is not something that was implemented in vain. That's what.
I don't know. I have a real problem with this. And again, if you said it wasn't rosin, wasn't sweat, it was you fill in the blank, which is illegal, suspend them for 80 games. I think that's fine. But this ambiguous, well, we've never seen a hand that sticky in the past. Well, thus, we had to throw him out of the game. So what does that mean? Well, is there a line of demarcation where hand, if you put a piece of paper on the hand and you can't get the paper off, now you get the guy out of the game? Otherwise, he's allowed to stay in the game?
There's a lot of blemishes on this whole thing. Like, number one, don't you think it's kind of ironic that the three guys that have been nabbed and have been suspended have all been under Phil Cuzzi's watch?
Yeah, I don't think it's ironic. I think this is like Phil Cuzzi's baby.
That's his baby. And how about
right?
And how about Dan Bellino, who was the home plate umpire the other day? You remember Dan Bellino, what he was known for before this past episode with Scherzer? He was the guy last year umpiring a game in Miami between the Diamondbacks and the Marlins that had that creepy—literally, that's the word I use—creepy inspection of Madison Bumgarner's hand, to where he was like feeling him up every ounce of his hand. It was uncomfortable to watch, and even Bumgarner was like, dude, what are you doing? To where Bumgarner got run because he got into an altercation with Dan Bellino. So you put those two principles at the center of this thing. I just think there's a hell of a lot of gray area to this.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. Let's hear from some of the particulars. Here's Buck Showalter on the suspension of his star pitcher.
I think Max decided to do what was best for our team, and that's all you need to know about Max. It's important for him to, you know, to try to give us the best chance to be as competitive as we can be while he's out, because we're going to be operating at 12 pitchers. So, you know, the sooner it's not hanging around and that we can have an understanding of what we need to deal with, you know, so in his mind, the sooner the better. And, you know, with some things reduced, that was good.
So it's 10 games, which really in essence is one start.
Is it? Is it one or two?
Well, it's one, because you got to figure if he starts, let's just say he starts today, right? So now you're going to go 10 games, which would mean that he'd miss the one start 5 games in, right? You'd go another five games, and then he'd start the day after that. So it's missing one start and then delaying his second start by a day is how I see it.
One, two, three, four, five.
Miss the day. Miss it.
Yeah, so it would probably be one. They said that he's eligible to come back May 1st against the Atlanta, ironically enough, against the Atlanta Braves when the Mets are wrapping up.
So I didn't even realize this. The suspension has started already.
Yes, May 1st.
Okay. So he can be back May 1.
Mm-hmm.
All right, listen.
Now, here's another part of this, and I don't know if you were thinking the same thing. When you heard Scherzer's explanation after the game yesterday, was it yesterday or 2 days ago, whenever it was, he kept talking about like his process in the dugout, right? When they told him that he had to wash his hands, and he kept talking about, I washed my hands with alcohol. He kept saying he was washing his hands with alcohol, even though there was an MLB official there supervising the whole thing.
Supervising him do this, yeah.
Supervising, but like, you know, look, we're the layman. We're not pitchers. We don't, you know, doctor up our hands or whatever to get ready to go out there and pitch. So naturally speaking, like if my hands are dirty, I'm going to wash them with soap and water. So I think to myself, well, why the alcohol? And then, all right, maybe it's the alcohol which was contributing to the stickiness on his hand, because alcohol, I mean, obviously there's some stickiness to it, right? Depending on what you're using it for. So I thought to myself, well, maybe he should have just washed his hands clean with soap and water and there wouldn't have been any of this confusion. David Cone, who did this for a living, being a big league pitcher, and he was pretty good, I heard him say on the Yankee broadcast yesterday, and I thought this was pretty telling because I had no idea. He said, no pitcher is going to wash his hands with soap and water because your fingers get pruney. Like, you want to have some sort of a grip here when you go out there to pitch, so that's why the alcohol was used in that situation. So that answers that question. But to the point you made about the MLB official, if you have a guy that's right there and he's watching everything that is taking place, how come his voice, Dave, during that come to Jesus moment with Phil Cuzzi, Dan Bellino, Max Scherzer, Buck Showalter, why isn't the official in the dugout? Why can't he emerge onto the field and maybe add some clarity to this whole situation?
It makes less than zero sense.
It's like the Wizard of Oz.
And you know what I understand? And again, I'm not saying either should be out or either should be in, but you have Domingo Germán last week, and his spin rate is considerably different than it was, and they want him thrown out, and for some reason he doesn't get thrown out. Why? Because it's up to interpretation of the umpire is what it is. What they've done is created another very gray area in the game of Major League Baseball. Every time they take two steps forward, mm-hmm. they take two steps back. Right?
And why does the MLB official watching Scherzer do this? If he was doing something illegal, why did they allow, like, why doesn't the official intervene and say you can't go out there like that? They sent him out multiple times when everything was supposedly A-OK.
I would love to sit here and tell you I had some grand answer. I don't have it. It doesn't make sense to me. I have no understanding of what's going on. And you know what? Do you think that the pitchers moving forward now say to themselves, now we got it? Now we understand what you can and what you can't do?
Well, how about this? You brought up spin rate, right? And that was one of the things that was argued after the game, because one of the members of the media in the Scherzer scrum said, Max, your spin rate in this game was the same as it yes. was all season. And he said, thank you very much. All right, so I'm just throwing it out there. Devil's advocate. If whatever Max Scherzer was doing on Wednesday was deemed illegal by Major League Baseball, and if his spin rate was exactly the same, if he was doing the same routine all season long up until this point, was he doing something illegal all year, but just was never nabbed for it?
Again, I guess probably so. So now does he have to change his preparation with the rosin and the sweat moving forward? Because maybe his hand gets stickier than everybody else's?
Well, he did bring up a valid point. Like, your previous start is in New York, where it's windy and chilly, and then versus, you know, L.A., where it's hot and sunny.
Yeah, you're going to sweat more.
Right. Naturally. Now, here's the thing. He's been caught. Maybe he realizes, okay, to comply with what Major League Baseball wants us to do, maybe I'm going to have to change my approach a little bit. We saw a couple of years ago, once MLB had the crackdown put in, that it took Gerrit Cole a little while to adjust to the new lay of the land. Now, we talk about often how important Max Scherzer is to this Mets team's chances this year. What if Max Scherzer has to undergo a little bit of a change in his approach? And maybe the results aren't what you need them to be, and what type of an impact is that going to have on the Mets moving forward?
Yeah, it's certainly a realistic possibility.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro and Rothenberg podcast. Looking for more access to the show?
Why? Because you know why.
Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at DR on ESPN.
Now you've had some time to think about this. You want to hang with our show at Citi Field? Well, soon you can. Dan, what are you doing Thursday, June 1?
I hadn't really given it much thought, but as of about an hour ago, it's now something that I am thinking about.
I love it. So here's what's going to happen. We're going to start our day broadcasting live from Publicans in Manhasset, 6 to 10. Okay? Then we hit the Citi Field parking lot for a tailgate starting at 11. All that leads up to the 1 o'clock game against the Philadelphia Phillies, the hated Philadelphia Phillies. So spend the day with us on June 1, starting, as I told you, Publicans Manhasset. Then off to Citi Field we go for the DiPietro and Rothenberg tailgate with all sorts of giveaways and prizes. Now, we're also going to go to the game. We're going to sit in section 128. There's a ticket for you as well, Dan.
Where is 128, by the way?
It's right there. It's right there in Citi Field. So get your tickets and hang with us all day long.
I need more than that. Come on.
Courtesy of 98.7 ESPN. I don't know. I don't
ballpark geography. Somebody look it up. Is it like right field, left field? Is it between the bases? Like,
well, I'll tell you what I know. 108 is on the first baseline, because I sat there for the Carrasco disaster against the Marlins a couple Sundays ago.
You actually went to a game already?
Yeah.
There's only been six home games, and you went to one of the six.
I will not apologize. Yeah. I went to the Sunday afternoon and watch Carrasco get mauled by the Miami Marlins.
Oh.
Correct.
Oh, no.
Was that
cookie.
On? That was Easter Sunday.
That, yeah, very good.
Well, so you mean to tell me right now you can't open up your fancy Yahoo app and check to see where section 128 is?
I mean, I guess I could.
You mean, well, or you might not be able to find that on Yahoo, because why would you?
Why are you? I don't understand. By the way, I've received numerous tweets defending me, saying, you know what, it shows even more now that you're a man of the people.
128 seems to be in the left field corner.
Oh, so basically you need a telescope to see home plate.
You know what? What is the matter with you?
Let's get back to the Yahoo thing for a second.
Yeah.
How does that make you a man of the people?
Because it's simplistic.
What people?
I mean, I don't know what you want
to
tell.
Are these the people that you want to associate with normally that are using a Yahoo? Ray, how outdated? Like, that's basically saying, yeah, I'm checking on the MySpace app.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
It seems outdated.
I mean, like, seriously, like, go to sports apps. Where is Yahoo ranked right now?
All I'm looking for is the schedule, and it had the schedule.
If you told me that there were only three apps available in the world, and Yahoo was one of them, I would still probably look at the other two apps, not even knowing which apps they were, before I would go to Yahoo for the schedule.
You have real issues. You know that?
How?
You have real,
Ray,
I mean,
Ray,
why
Ray,
are you
seriously,
critiquing?
Help me.
All I'm saying is that I go to an app, and it has the spread there. The point of the story was not what app I use. The point of said story was that you almost can't avoid the spreads of the games.
But you went to the Yahoo app.
Yeah.
Where our app for this company has exactly that type of information.
I have
for.
The ESPN
you would be
app.
Amazed.
The Yahoo app is what I'm comfortable with, and it's what I used. And for some
so
reason,
worked at this company
you can't get
long?
Over it.
For how you long you've been here?
How long have I been
a decade?
Where? At
ESPN.
The station?
Yeah.
I've been at the station for 12 plus years now.
12 plus years. And right. In a dozen years, you have not gotten yourself comfortable or familiar with this app. Do you know, Dave, I'm going to break some news here. Ray, do we have a breaking news?
1 second.
Probably not. He's probably sleeping on the job.
News! Jazz hands!
All right, here's your Jazz Hands breaking news. Dave, you won't believe this, but if you do open up that fancy little ESPN app, the one on your phone with the E on it, you are actually able, get this, get
do
this.
Do you have the ESPN app?
Hang on, I'm looking. I do.
That's a better question, but how about this?
It's the red E on the white
the red
background.
E.
Yep.
Correct.
I'm in it now.
How about this? If you open it up, this might floor you. It might blow your mind. You can actually watch games on that app. How about that?
You know
you
what?
Can
you
watch games.
Big news, Jazz Hands. I'm rescinding
you know what you
the invitation.
Do you know what
you're
you watch
not
on the
welcome
Yahoo app?
In Section 128 at
you
City
get
Field
to
anymore.
Watch. You get to watch maybe some rolls of microfilm on the Yahoo app because that's how
you,
old
you know,
and outdated it is.
You're a nasty fellow, is what you are. All right, unnecessary.
By the way, so you went to the game.
You know, we have other things.
No.
Go ahead. You're controlling the show. I should leave the show.
No, I don't want you to leave the show. We're having a conversation. How was your in-person pitch clock viewing experience? Because I didn't know you went to the game. So wait a sec. We worked together last Friday.
Yeah.
You had already gone to the game. I had no idea. We could have talked about this a week ago. How was the pitch clock?
Had
experience?
I realized that you needed to know everything I'm doing in my life, I would have told you that.
Well, sorry. I know now that you got annoyed because you didn't get free refills when you went out to lunch one day. That was important enough. But you going to a baseball game when you work on a sports talk radio show is not worth bringing up.
All right. Well, I was at the game, and I'll tell you, I'm glad you asked this question. All right. We attacked the situation a little bit differently than normal. Because normally I would try to get there right around game time, and then in between innings or whatever, you run, you make a food run, and you come back and eat. But we didn't do that because I know that if you go and there's a long line for food, you could miss a good amount of the game. So what we did was we left a little bit earlier, about 15, 20 minutes earlier, got to the game about 15, 20 minutes earlier, and made sure to eat our full food and our lunch before the game started. And that way, during said game, we could just sit there and enjoy the entirety of the game.
So you feel like you were able to soak up the ballpark experience.
Not an issue in the world. I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
Now, was that a longer game? Because, like you said, Carrasco was awful.
It didn't take it. You know what? It was a longer game, and it didn't even take 3 hours. But yes, I guess where we are now is a little bit of a longer game.
Right. Well, that's good. So you enjoyed it then. So you think this is headed in the right direction then?
I think so. Michael Macias, you're 100% right. The Yahoo app is just much easier and faster to see schedules and scores. Grosso,
you know what else is easy too?
Moron.
Long division. But you know what? It really isn't applicable in your day in and day out life, right?
I think this is a terrible take by you. So Mets last night, we'll get to the Yankees on the other side, back to the NBA, NHL, all of it. Mets last night, you know, it's funny. I was watching the game. Mets are up 5-0. I'm like, all right, you know what? I think I'm done. Four innings in. No, seriously. I was tired, Dan. So it's after 11 o'clock, four innings in. I tapped out. I figured 5-0 lead was going to be good. Then I wake up to pee in the middle of the night. I see the Mets win 9-4. I was like, beautiful. I didn't realize until this morning how dicey this game got, though.
It did a little bit because Senga kind of lost a little bit, started to have some issues with finding the plate. Giants took advantage of it. And the thing that worked in the Mets' favor, ultimately, when they were able to stretch out the lead again, which kind of is what they did in the Dodger game the day before, which is a good sign for this team. Remember, we talked about the Giants, how they came from the East Coast the day before. And the kid they brought into the game last night, after Sean Manaea, Tristan Beck out of the bullpen, he didn't have it.
Well, it was his first ever major league appearance, right?
But he was one of those guys that had to wear it. You know what I mean? Like, it was his game the rest of the way. It was almost like Gabe Kapler saying, we're losing the battle to win the war. And the Mets were able to feast on it and take advantage, and that's what you want to do. So don't apologize for it.
No, nor should they. So it's a good win. The Mets win. So they've lost only one game so far in this road trip, and that was the game Kershaw threw the gem. Right? You got three more against the Giants, and then you come home for the Nationals. So I get it that Scherzer's going to be out till May 1, but you know what? Things right now are looking pretty good for the Mets. Verlander hopefully won't be for long. Scherzer's going to be back. You'll have to cobble together a starter here, a starter there. You know who's pitching tonight for the Mets?
Joey Lucchesi.
Yes, Joey Lucchesi will get the start for the Mets
tonight. Would you take one out of the next three? I'm going to be greedy and say give me one out of the next three, because then that would make the trip, what, 7-3?
Yeah, well, I'm going to say no, and I'll tell you why. Because if you told me I went 2-2 against the Giants, I'd say, yeah, I'll take that. But now I've got the one. I don't want to sign
for... You don't want to lose three straight, Dave. The Giants
But I don't think that's going to happen.
The Giants... But, well, look at the pitchers, the Mets. I don't trust Lucchesi. I don't trust David Peterson. And McGill is kind of, eh. So... Just give me one of these games. Giants aren't any good.
Yeah, I know. I agree with you. But because they're not any good, I'm going to push the envelope a little bit. I want two. Give me two of the next three.
Yeah, but you know what? You got to start winning some games, because Atlanta's missing some key guys, and they're still shot out of a cannon.
What is happening? You said one of three. I said two of three, and you said, yeah, but you got to start winning games.
Well, that's what I mean. I thought you have to start winning games.
Right, so that's why I want two out of three.
Okay, then I'll take two out of three.
All right, then two out of three is what you'll get.
Thanks for listening to the DPHRO and Rothenberg podcast. Listen live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN New York app, or on your smart speaker by asking it to play 98.7 ESPN.